A new to Netflix docudrama features tech industry insiders like former Facebook, Twitter, and Google engineers and execs talking about the problematic angle to the social media giants they helped to propel into the world. Here are a few of them talking about the seriousness of the issue in the movie The Social Dilemma.
They know when people are lonely. They know when people are depressed. They know when people are looking at photos of your ex-romantic partners. They know what you're doing late at night. They know the entire thing.
Whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, or what kind of neuroses you have, what your personality type is like.
They have more information about us than has ever been imagined in human history.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Did you watch The Social Dilemma? What did you think? Are you worried about the algorithms getting smarter or how social media use might be changing our society or us? Do you feel the urge to limit or eliminate your presence on social media platforms? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Steve Knoll is a marketing professor and social media expert at Madison College. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me back.
So, Steve, what were your initial impressions of the documentary?
Well, I'm happy that people are watching it and talking about it. I think it's really important that people understand the business of social media. There's a lot of misinformation about it. So any opportunity to kind of talk about how this works, I think it's valuable for all people to know it. Personally, as someone who's been teaching this stuff for over 10 years, I'm happy to say I really didn't learn anything new. So I guess that's good. But at the same point, too, I did find the movie was a little manipulative in how it presented some of the information.
Well, and that's interesting because it is definitely a sense of impending doom, I would say, kind of hangs over it. And these are heavy hitters, big players, you know, people who started or ran things like Instagram and Twitter and Google and, you know, name any social media platform. And they had people from there who are expressing serious concern. Do you think that their concerns are valid?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the idea that people should really understand how social media companies monetize people is very important. I think everyone really should understand it's a business and how a business works. I just thought the movie was kind of manipulative, and at one point they're talking about how companies shouldn't be manipulating you to feel certain ways. But yet the documentary was absolutely manipulating you to feel a certain way. So,
well, and that's nothing new either. That's certainly not unique to social media or technology.
Absolutely not. And I mean, it's an entertaining documentary, which I appreciate. I think some of the stuff when you start talking about, like, you know, algorithms and clickstream personality touch points gets a little dry and technical. And at least the movie presented it in an entertaining way that is easily digestible for the average person that doesn't necessarily know a lot about what these terms mean.
I think one of the points that I found really interesting, and as you said, nothing new, but I thought they said it really well, is that basically there's nothing is free. And so if you are using a service and not paying for it, that means you're the product. It's not.
Yes. And that's an old marketing expression. If something's free, you're the product. And this is something that, you know, when people, you know, complain about, I don't like how Facebook is, you know, I look up, you know, some shoes on a website and then a second later, here's an ad for it on Facebook. You have to remember, consumers overwhelmingly want that business model. They want the internet to be free. So in other words, they want to use products without paying for them. And when the internet really became a force in the 90s, there was this big debate about business models. You know, do we go down an advertising supported road where you provide a free product, so to say, in exchange for advertising on it? Or do you do a subscription based product? And consumers overwhelmingly rejected the idea that subscription-based was even an option. They wanted the internet to be free. So they felt that they already had to pay to have a service provider to get to the internet. They felt once they're on the internet, everything should be free. As a result, it enabled these companies to really take that business model and blow it up and basically say, okay, consumers, you wanted it to be free. You want to be on it all day long and not get a bill at the end of the day. Well, here's the trade-off is it costs money to run Facebook. It costs money to run Google. And if consumers aren't, you know, contributing with their pocketbooks, they've got to contribute with their personality.
Right. So we're not paying in cash, but we're paying in data.
You're paying in data. Yes. Yes. And there's actually a good thing about that. One of the nicest things about social media marketing is that it gives the ability for companies to market a specific product to a specific end user. And when I teach an advertising class, one of the first things I say is who doesn't like advertising? And of course, everyone raises their hands. And then I say, but can you name a commercial you loved? And everyone starts spouting out all these famous commercials. And I'm like, so you love advertising, but you hate it. You know, the answer is humans love advertising as long as it's relevant to them as an individual. Mm-hmm. And before social media, advertising had this kind of scattershot approach. You put an ad on TV or on the radio or something, knowing that thousands, if not millions of people would be exposed to it, but only maybe 5 or 10% would actually buy your product. So 90% of your budget was wasted, and that was acceptable to get to those 10%. Nowadays, companies can say, you know what, you're into skiing because you post about it on Instagram, so we're going to show you ads for skiing-related products. And if somebody has zero interest in skiing, we're not going to show you the ads. So in a way, it's actually a good business model because it allows you to see ads only for products that you actually are interested in. Plus, of course, it costs companies a lot less money because that 90% waste isn't being wasted because you're only talking to those, you know, skiers. You know, so that as a business model, it's actually a really good, very good for both the consumer and a business way of doing things. However, this is still a new medium. And if you really look at the history of advertising and marketing, anytime a new medium develops, newspaper, you know, 150 years ago or so, radio 100 years ago, television in the 40s and 50s, all the mediums took years to really, people had to explore how they worked, what didn't work, and all that. And there's always been an ethical component to mass medium, no matter what it is. And social media really is really been around about 15 years. 2006 is kind of considered the mainstreaming of social media. That's the year that Facebook basically opened it up to everyone that wasn't a student. So we are still in an industry that is still figuring out how to walk, and it's already running. So people are making a lot of ethical mistakes, and some of them are intentional, some of them are accidental. I think Facebook, being the biggest well-known company, even though they're not really the biggest, Google's the biggest, but Facebook really has gone in with a very naive attitude that, you know, human beings will always choose to do the right thing. And that's just not a human characteristic. And as a result, there have been a lot of unethical behavior, especially on Facebook, that really Facebook needs to address. So I'm happy that we're having conversations like this, because as much as I think social media is a wonderful thing, you know, the more that consumers can understand how it works, the harder it's going to be for people to use it unethically.
We're talking with Steve Knoll right now. He's a marketing professor and social media expert at Madison College. We're talking about the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma, which is about social media, and we're putting it into context. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1061. 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you care about or worry about all the data that big tech companies are collecting while we're online? If you watched the documentary, what stood out to you? Do you think we're too worried about social media use or not worried enough? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And no irony intended, you can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back in just a moment and take your calls here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Steve Knoll, marketing instructor and social media expert at Madison College. We're talking about the documentary, The Social Dilemma. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Did you watch The Social Dilemma on Netflix? How did you manage your own social media use, and has it changed over time? What about your kids' online presence? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to the phones, and Ray in Milwaukee is up. Hi, Ray.
Hi, what really angers me about these big giant tech companies, and it appears the European community has a better handle on privacy since we have no laws about privacy here, but the thing that makes my blood boil, $1 trillion companies paying zero in state and federal taxes, and we all wonder why our schools are so messed up, why our streets are so messed up, and why especially the states, have gotten such a raw deal on this whole big tech thing. And maybe the guests could elaborate a little bit about the difference between the European community and their view of privacy and our lack of that here, sure. And then also what they pay in taxes.
Great. Thanks for that call, Ray. And Steve, first of all, maybe let's talk about that privacy issue. Does it matter significantly what country you're living in, how much privacy you have online?
Well, and yes, I mean, the internet is global for the most part. And, you know, that's something that we really started seeing in the last few years. In fact, when people just even go to a website, you're probably going to see a cookie notice pop up, you know, if the website uses cookies. A lot of this originated out of Europe and specifically France. The country of France has a lot of very specific privacy laws. It's part of their culture a lot more. That is a big difference between French culture and U.S. culture. So as a result, France really originated a lot of these internet privacy laws that basically said, if you are a business doing business in the country of France, you need to follow our laws. And then from France, it kind of grew into the EU supporting it. And as a result, that's a big chunk of the world for companies like Facebook and Google to not be doing business in. So as a result, even here in the United States, we've seen the last few years kind of an uptick in, you know, some privacy stuff, a lot more call to awareness about it. So when you are visiting these sites, you're going to see more information about privacy, that, you know, that we have cookies, and a lot of it is you can thank, if you like that, you can thank countries like France that really kind of force these companies to say, hey, if you want to play, you have to play by our rules first, and it does affect the world. So I think that's a good thing. And again, you know, my whole thing is consumers should know how this how these businesses work, because it makes you a smarter consumer, it makes you a better consumer, and it makes you a safer consumer.
Mm-hmm. And it's a little off the topic of the documentary, but Ray also asked about how much they're paying in taxes, where that huge amount of wealth is going.
Well, and that's the thing, is though, that's no different than any other big corporation being subjected to, you know, the laws of America. You know, it's just, it doesn't matter that you're a tech company. It's literally just that's a tax law that they've written it in ways that any big company can, you know, get out of paying taxes. But that's not something that only affects the tech industry. Mm-hmm. That's something that affects all business in the United States, not just the tech company.
We're talking with Steve Knoll of Madison College right now. We're talking about the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma, about how social media affects us in ways that we do and do not realize. And a big part of the documentary actually does talk about how a concern that social media platforms can be used and abused in ways that can really affect democracy. Ted in Racine is on the line with something about that to say. Hi, Ted.
Hi. Yeah, I was just, I'm really concerned about how foreign actors or maybe some bad actors are using social media to divide us as a society in the United States, and potentially like rigging up elections and other kinds of like things that are, you know, really kind of scary. I just wanted to, you know if you might comment on that.
Sure. Thanks for that call, Ted. Steve?
Well, I mean, the fact that other countries are spreading misinformation and posing as American citizens to post divisive stuff, that is absolutely going on. And I know that, you know, the term fake news gets thrown around a lot. That term is generally used incorrectly. But there are other countries, there's actually companies that manufacture artificial news stories, fake news stories, with the intent of spreading misinformation. Because if you see a news story that triggers you an emotional response, you know, people click on it and they share it out to all their followers without ever vetting as to whether or not that's truly a real news story or some kid in Ukraine wrote it, because having 10,000 people click on it is going to make him, you know, hundreds of dollars. So This has become an industry in some countries in Eastern Europe, basically manufacturing divisive fake news and then posting it in the U.S. And they're, of course, generating all this money and revenue from all the clicking and sharing. But that's very unethical. But, you know, it's coming out of, and this goes back to the whole idea that there's only one internet, and it's not just the U.S. internet. So there are other laws in other countries and different attitudes about it. I find that highly unethical myself, but it doesn't stop other people of saying, well, it's not like we're selling cigarettes. We're selling, you know, stories. And if Americans are so stupid that they're going to click on a story that is so obvious it's fake, and then we generate advertising revenue, then so be it. And, you know, you can argue the ethics up and down about that, but that's not going to go away, because people, you know, there's this human thing about wanting to share bad news. And then there's this human thing about wanting to say, I told you so. And those two attitudes play into this spreading of misinformation. And this is not a Republican or a Democratic issue. People on both sides are equally guilty of doing this. It's when you see stories that trigger an emotion and you either say, see, I told you all along, this person is this or this person is that. And people want to be that first person to share it to their friends. People really need to stop and think before they share. That's the biggest problem in America on social media, is this need to be the first to share bad news or provocative news. And when I look at something, you know, you'll see like a news story came across that, you know, a certain celebrity passed away or something like that. My first thought is, okay, before I share this, I'm going to vet it. I'm going to check a couple other legitimate news sources and see if they're reporting on it before I would add my voice to it. And I think if more people would stop before they click, we could really cut that down significantly. But unfortunately, that's really kind of hardwired into us, not only as humans, but especially as Americans. That's part of our culture, to want to gossip and want to be the first person to be able to tell everyone in the neighborhood about this new thing. And, you know, that's not anything new. That's how our culture has been for decades. But now we do it digitally. And as a result, what might take a week for the gossip to go around the neighborhood can be spread via Twitter in 10 minutes. And that's truly scary and tragic at the same way.
We're running short on time, but I want to take a quick call from Scott in Fort Atkinson. Scott, hi.
Hi. Actually, just listening to what he said, it very much so is in par with what I wanted to say. Just stopping to think before you post. I was saying that I came of age with social media. I was young when I first started using it. I'm an adult now. I look back and shudder when I think about some of the things I used to post. I think kids have a tendency to overshare. You never know who you're going to end up working with or who's going to end up being a part of your family or a friend. I think parents should take a more active role in what their kids or young adults are posting on social media. And I just think it's something that everybody should think about.
Thanks so much for that, Scott. And Steve, as we wrap up with the last minute or so, what can we do if we want to be active on social media? And for some of us, we need to be for our jobs. Can we be more savvy consumers?
Well, we can be if we take the effort to do it. And I agree. I think, you know, and I'm not putting the burden on parents, but certainly they should be monitoring what their kids are posting. You know, younger people tend to overshare personal details, but the whole thing about sharing like fake news stories and a lot of political stuff, that is definitely a problem with the older generation. You know, people who, you know, the older you are, the more likely you're going to be sharing political misinformation. People who are 25 are oversharing about, you know, what they did last night with their friends, okay? But people who are 60 are the ones who are really the biggest fault of sharing political information without properly vetting it for it. So I think it's really important to think about the click before you share. But depending on what generation you're in, it's for different reasons.
Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me back.
Steve Knoll is a marketing professor and social media expert at Madison College. He joined us to talk about the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.